I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, Sonia Sotomayor has been tapped to become the nation's next Supreme Court justice. If confirmed, she will be the first of Latino heritage. In a regular monthly visit with the magazine mavens, we'll ask two top magazine editors whose publications are geared to the Latino community how Sotomayor's selection is playing with their readers. But first, more on the recession. The economy has been front and center in the news this week, as it has been for so many months now. We're at a point where the downturn has affected nearly everybody in some way. But there's one group of people who stand to lose more than most. A new report claims that the recession could reverse many of the gains made over the past 35 years in improving the lives of children. To talk more about this, we've called Ruby Takanishi. She's the president of the Foundation for Child Development, which produces something called the Annual Child Well-Being Index. And for a firsthand perspective on how the recession is affecting children, we've called Cora Masters-Barry. She's the founder of the Southeast Tennis and Learning Center, which offers a wide range of after-school and enrichment programs for children in Washington, D.C., especially for a neighborhood known as Anacostia. Welcome to you both. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Ruby, I want to start with you because your organization monitors child well-being. You produce this annual index of child well-being. What exactly does that mean? What factors do you look at to evaluate well-being?
Well, the Child Well-Being Index is based on national statistics that are collected by the federal government since 1975. It is a composite of 23 key childhood social indicators of well-being that are then clustered into seven quality of life or well-being domains, including economic well-being, health, safety, educational attainment, connectedness to community, social ties, and emotional and spiritual well-being.
And you come to, in this report, which is being issued today, you come to a fairly dire conclusion. You say that gains that have been achieved over the past 35 years could be lost. How did you arrive at that conclusion?
Well, when you have a index that is tracking child well-being since 1975, the base year is 1975, and the most current statistics are 2007. And basically what you can do for each year is to track child and family economic well-being over those 31 or 32-year period. And when you look at the trend lines, you can see that the current recession will essentially bring family economic well-being back to the 1975 level.
Is there one area in particular you're particularly concerned about?
Well, I think what's really important about the Child Well-Being Index is that it presents a big picture on children. There have been a number of reports that talk about the impact of the recession on residential mobility or homelessness or child health or educational attainment or family economic well-being. And what the index does is to say, how does this affect the whole quality of life for children? How do all of these different parts of children's lives interconnect? So basically, the message is that not only will family economic well-being go back to the 1975 levels, but it will affect things like social ties, community relations, health status, educational attainment, a whole variety of factors for children.
Ruby is very interested in the big picture. Cora Masters-Barry, I want to focus on the little picture, if we could call it that. You were recently interviewed for a piece in the Washington Post where you talked about what you're seeing firsthand. The piece talked about how kids used to come in to the after-school program, and the Southeast Tennis and Learning Center offers a wide array of after-school programs, not just tennis, but also, you know, computers, sewing. And, of course, kids come in after school. They're hungry. They want snack. And you talked about how, you know, typical kids, it used to be, you know, they didn't want the fruit. If it was strawberry jelly, not grape, they'd complain. No more of that. Tell me more about what you're seeing.
First, I'm glad you brought that article up because you're right. There has been a change in their attitudes toward food, but the article painted the situation much more dire than it really actually was. I was quite surprised because it ended by saying they were extremely hungry because they had not eaten dinner the night before and there was no dinner on the table. Well, I didn't say that, and I don't know about that, but I will say that they were accurate in terms of how they come in, how quickly they want to eat, how much they want to eat, and their choices, where before they were so picky. You know, kids are normally picky and hoarding food. So I think that was one indicator that the physical well-being of the children are affected on some level or other.
What about the energy level of the kids? Some of the people who run after-school programs in other parts of the city are saying that, you know, kids come in, they're tired, they seem just kind of low energy, dispirited. Are you seeing that?
Well, not a lot, only because we anticipate that. So the first thing we do when they come in is feed them. So if that is a factor, you know, the snack time is first, you know, eating the apple, drinking some juice, eating the sandwich, and then getting energized by getting on the court. So we sort of have like this report, we're anticipating things. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to meet them before they become a problem.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. We're talking about how the recession is affecting the well-being of children. And our guests are Cora Masters Barry, founding director of the Southeast Tennis and Learning Center in Washington, D.C. It's a center that offers a wide array of after-school programs for children. And Ruby Takanishi, she's the president of the Foundation on Child Development, which produces the annual Child Well-Being Index. Ruby, you talked about social connectedness being one element of well-being, and you're saying that that is expected to decline. What is that, and why does this matter?
Well, it matters because it's a basic principle of life that relationships matter. People care about you. You're healthier. You have greater hope in the future. So social ties, community ties are really important. And what this report shows is that the effects of the recession will, for example, of course, put stresses on families. They will lead to greater mobility of children in terms of residential mobility. And in prior recessions, residential mobility tends to decrease. But because of the foreclosure crisis, we expect that there will be greater changes in residential mobility.
That's interesting. So you're saying in prior recessions, people tended not to move. They tended to stay put. But now,
right,
because this recession is being driven by the housing crisis, if you want to use that term, kids are being, because people's homes are being foreclosed on, and because that affects renters as well as owners, lots of kids are on the move. Cora, are you seeing that? Are
no,
you seeing kids
actually,
moving?
I'm very interested in that because there are the poverty, below poverty, the working poor, the middle class. So depending upon what economic category you're talking about, foreclosures affect, obviously, people who are at least middle class, working class.
No, they affect people who rent, because if the landlord is foreclosed upon, but often the renters have to leave.
Yeah, renters also, but mostly in an area such as Anacostia, they're in multifamily units. And they're pretty much going to be there. And if they're not going to live in this one, they're going to live in the one across the street. So they don't leave their community so much.
You don't see as much
I don't see that in an urban environment,
at least in your neighborhood.
Yeah, I don't see that. And I also don't see the social disconnectedness. As a matter of fact, I see more social cohesiveness. There are more kids coming to the after-school program, more people being involved, more parental involvement. It's almost like the village is beginning to, you know, to build and to come together. I see actually the opposite of that.
That's interesting.
On the front line.
I see what you're saying. Ruby, the report also projected declines in the number of pre-K students. Now, why would that be?
Well,
and why is that important?
The answer is quite simple. Everywhere in this country and everywhere in the world, pre-K education is not part of our universal public education system. It's a discretionary program. And when times are hard, those are the programs that are cut.
Well, I agree with that. All the way back from Head Start, you know, to Jump Start and all the various pre-K programs. But they have not been so much of a reality in the underserved community anyway. So, you know, I think that the downward spiral of education, from my perspective, is not so much pre-K as it is the reading levels and the effort children put in the schools, which again shows itself differently when they show up in after-school programs. And there are more money. Interesting enough, she's right in the study. They say they're cutting back on programs that relate to getting kids off the street, prevention, interdiction of crime, and all of that. But they are putting more money in, interestingly enough, into after-school programs and tutorings and requiring after-school tutoring at schools because of this this decline.
What about in some parts of the country, you're hearing about programs like subsidized daycare being cut because of budget budget affects, and a lot of people, policymakers, they're worried about more kids being unsupervised and also parents who are losing their jobs, not being able to pay for daycare. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, I'm seeing that in Washington. It happened recently in the Department of Parks and Recreation. The whole daycare thing program was put over to the department, Board of Education, to the school system. So I don't know how that's all going to work out. But that has affected working parents, working mothers, single head of households have been tremendously affected by that.
Ruby, finally, we have about a minute and a half left. Your report issues this a very stern warning that says that children could be so negatively affected by the recession, but you also offer some ideas about what could be done to minimize these effects or minimize these losses of well-being over the time. What are some of those what are some of your suggestions for minimizing the effects on children?
Sure. What we know from research studies that go back to the Great Depression and contemporary studies is that particularly young children who are affected by poverty have lifelong consequences. So there are at least two things that one can do. Certainly investing in health care, particularly preventive health care, is a no-brainer, so I won't have to say anything more about that. And secondly, I think it's very important to invest in the early education, early pre-K education of children, because we know overall that at least 30% or more, it's probably higher in lower-income communities, come to kindergarten really unprepared for learning. And we also know that when they go to good-quality pre-K programs, they do extraordinarily well, not only in kindergarten, and if they have good quality elementary education, very well into
the future. Thank you so much. Ruby Takanishi is the president of the Foundation for Child Development. She was here with me in our Washington, D.C. studios, along with Cora Masters Barry, the founding CEO of the Recreation Wish List Committee and the Southeast Tennis and Learning Center here in Washington, D.C. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle.